We're on page 446. We're really not done. We have to go back to the two psukim that we're in the middle of. We learned a lot of details of them, but we're not a bunch of details we didn't get to yet. Basically, in Pasikud, the Torah says, "Va'asu adin atzishitim." You have to make this adin out of wood. And then the Torah says, 2.5 long, 1.5 wide, 1.5 high. And we discussed last time that the reason why the Torah says half measurements, because when it comes to learning Torah, a person should only feel like they're a half. In other words, they're not complete. We find a similar thing. We find a similar thing. Interestingly, when a Gemara has pages, so the Gemara always starts from Daf Beis. If you always look in the Gemara, it never starts page Aleph. Why does it start page Beis? That a person should always be in the middle of learning. They should never be at the beginning of learning. They should be in the middle of learning. So the same thing it says, the measurements of the Arin have to be Dafka. And the Mefarshim, by the way, the Kaliyaka goes a whole numerical thing. It equals 48. And 48 is the 48 different ways that Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos you're able to acquire Torah and so on. But we find over here it says, Va'asu Arin Atzeishitim. All the other things in the Mishkan, the Torah says, V'asisa. If you look on the next page already, it says, V'asisa Kaperas, V'asisa Shulchan, V'asisa Badi Atzeishitim, V'asisa Menoras. Whenever the Torah is talking about making things in the Mishkan, the Torah says the word va'asisa you should make, which is singular. When it comes to the Arin, the Torah says the asu they should make. What? Oh, one second. So the question is, Bezalel made the Arin, as we see later on in Chumash. So why does the Torah use the expression va'asu plural? Why doesn't it say va'asisa? And they explain, the Arin represents learning Torah. And if the Arin represents learning Torah, the Mishnah wants to say that everybody needs to have a part of it. And we'll see a little few differences between the Arin and other vessels of the Mishkan, where the Torah changes its expression, because the Torah wants to show when it comes to learning Torah, it has to apply to every Jew. And the Mefarshim point out, it applies to every Jew in two ways. If a Jew is able to study themselves, then they have an obligation to study. If they don't have an obligation to study, they need to make the ark. What does the ark symbolize? The vessel for the luchos, the tablets which were in the Arin. Meaning, the luchos represent learning Torah. The ark represents the ability for them to learn Torah. So therefore, the Torah is teaching us that if you can't learn Torah yourself, you have to at least support Torah. And therefore, for everybody it says, the Asu Arin, everybody has to make the Arin. The Rabbeinu Bachaya says an interesting thing, that the word Arin, again, which represents Torah, Arin, he says, is the letters Or. If you look at the word Arin, Arin is the concept of Or, because Torah is Or, plus a Nun. But Torah is a level of Or, and you could say, add to it, that the Nun, at the end of the letter, is a long Nun, which is bringing down Torah from a high level all the way down to a low level. So it's bringing down the Or, the light of Torah, from the heavenly places all the way down to the earthly places. The Alter Rebbe in Lakut Torah says that the word Arin is the same letters as the word Nira, which is Nira, which refers to fear. It refers to fear, because when a person learns Torah, they're supposed to have the fear before they learn Torah. So just in the name of Arin itself, and the doing of the Arin, the Torah is teaching us a number of things. Number one, every Jew has to participate in the building of the Arin, meaning in the studying and the building of Torah. Every Jew has an obligation to realize that they're only a half, therefore it was 2.5 by 1.5 by 1.5 to show that a Jew is only a half. And the next thing is like this: v'tzipisa esei zav tohar, and you have to cover it with, you have to plate it with gold. Mibayis mechus tzapeno, inside and outside, you should cover it with gold. And we discussed last time that the question is, why does the Torah say to make three, as Rashi explains, they made three arcs, okay? The inside was wood, the outside one was gold, and the inside one was gold, okay? In fact, it was a smaller size. What do you mean, how do you do it? Three boxes, one bigger than the next. Here. Let's get a proper picture of the Orem first, and then we'll understand. This is the finished product of the Orem. Okay? This is the way the Orem looked, with the poles, with the cheruvim on top that we'll soon discuss, and the covering of the Orem.
What do you
call it? Cheruvim. The cheruv. In English, they're called cherubim. But the way this was made, they first show you here. These are the cherubim. But this is the way the Arden was made, with three boxes. Can you see this picture? There was three actual boxes. The middle one was made out of wood. The inside and outside one were made out of gold. Okay, and the smaller ones fit into the bigger one. So when you put in all the boxes into each other, so you basically ended up with gold on the inside and gold on the outside. Plus they had a golden crown around the middle box because part of it's going to be open, right? Because when you put one box in the next, you have a little bit of an opening. So that part they covered with gold also. So basically, this is the way the Arden initially was made, and then this is the way the Arden ended up by itself, without the covering, but with the two poles. And then, as we'll continue in the next psukim, the way they actually did everything. So Mefarshim ask, why couldn't it be plain gold? Just make it a box out of gold and finished. We need three boxes. So the simple answer is it would be too heavy. It would be too heavy. But they answer another thing. Concerning Torah, it says, Eitz Chayim Hila Machazikim Bo. The Torah is a tree of life for those that hold on to it. And therefore, Hashem Dafka wanted that the Arden should have wood in it, because it's Eitz Chayim Hila Machzikim Bo, it should be the tree of life for those that hold on to it. But it has to be covered with gold inside and outside to show that the gold, the preciousness of Torah, that Torah is precious like gold. Or like we say, on top. And Chamadim Izov, Mipazrov, that Torah is more precious than all these things.
Does this also have
Tzishitim? Yeah, it says. But Sisa Aran Tzishitim. It says clearly it was Atzishitim.
All the wood that was used in the Mishkan was from Atzishitim, or just the crushing?
All the wood that was used in the Beis HaMikdash was Atzishitim.
And Mishkan?
Not the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan. The Beis HaMikdash didn't have wood, it was stone. Okay.
And the gold was pure, 24 karat?
24, well it says...
It can be 24,
but can... 1 second. He brings down over here that there are seven different types of gold that they used in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan. Trust me, I don't understand what he's talking about, but there's actually seven different types of gold. There was Zahav Tahar, here. One was Zahav Tev, one was Zahav Tar, one was Zahav Shachut, one was Zahav Sagur, one was Zahav Mezukok, one was Zahav Mufaz, and one was Zahav Pruyim. Okay, when you're bored, you'll look it up and you'll see the way he defines which each one was. But here, it says, Zipita is Zahav Tor is pure gold.
So this particular...
Whatever, one. Most of the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash were made out of pure gold.
Only pure gold, because you can't make anything, it's so stuffed.
It's not.
He discusses over here that...
You have to use another metal.
They had the wood that held it. No way, they figured it out. But Zahav Tor actually means pure gold. Okay, then he continues and he says like this. V'yatzaktolai, and you should cast it. Arba tabezah, four rings of gold. Oh, by the way, there's another interesting thing. The Mefarshim ask a question. Moshe Rabbeinu came down with the Luchis on Yom Kippur. Right? According to Rashi, after Yom Kippur, he started telling him to build a Mishkan. So where did Moshe Rabbeinu put the luchos until this stuff was built? Because later on in Chumash we're going to learn there was an interesting debate between Moshe Rabbeinu and Bezalel. Okay? Now Bezalel, who was the engineer of the Mishkan, Moshe Rabbeinu said to Bezalel, first build the Kelim and then build the Mishkan. So Bezalel says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Rebbe, you're not a very good architect. If I build the Kelim, where am I going to put them? He said, first you have to build the Mishkan, and then you have to make the Kelim. So Moshe Rabbeinu said to him, you know, Bezalel, you're right. That's what Hashem told me Taka to do. And I switched the order, and there's a reason, we'll get to later, why Moshe Rabbeinu switched the order. But if that's the Cheshbon, by the time you figure out, it took him a while to build the Mishkan. And definitely a while to build the Arden. So where were the luchis that Moshe Rabbeinu brought down from Har Sinai? So it says in the Medrash that Moshe Rabbeinu built an Arden out of eights. He built an ark out of wood just to hold the luchis until the Mishkan was finished. And then when the Mishkan was finished, then he brought him into the Arden that he built with the Mishkan. Okay, so then he says like this. You see, Pisa says, Yitzaktali, you should cast Arba Tabizov, four golden rings. Vanasata la Arba Pamesav, put the rings on the four corners. Shtei Taba Yisaltali Yoachas, two rings on one corner, on one side. Ushtei Tabois, and two rings, Altala Ashenis, on the other side. As you can see in the picture, there are two rings on one side, and two rings on the other side. Okay? So there are four rings, two on each side, as we're going to learn, to put the poles through the Aron. Now, the poles were very long. The poles were longer than the width of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now, in the Mishkan, there was the curtain, the pareches, that separated between the Oil Maid, which was the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and the other rooms. It says that the poles actually protruded outside of the pareches. In other words, it stuck through the pareches. It bulged out the pareches. That it should, because they're actually very long poles. And the Shem wanted...
It was longer than the length.
It was longer than the width. Well, it depends what you call width or length. No?
The width is when you approach left to right, that's width.
Okay, well... No? No. Usually length is whichever one is longer is length, and the width is usually the shorter one. That's in English. I don't know in other languages. But in English, usually, length is the longer one, width is the shorter one. Whichever was, the Arin, we learned last time we discussed, right? The Kodesh HaKadoshim in the Beit HaMikdash. The Mishkan was smaller. The Kodesh HaKadoshim was 20 Amis. The Arin was 2.5 Amis, as we read. Right? Now, as we learned, one of the unique miracles, discussed it last Monday night, right? Or was it a different class? Different class. Okay, the mitzvah. Okay, I don't remember what I'm doing anymore. The Arden. Oh, right, in the morning. By Chassidus, you're right. Okay, the Arden was 2.5 Amis wide. The Kodesh HaKadoshim in the Beis HaMikdash was 20 Amis wide. Okay? Now, the Gemara says in Yuma that the whole room was 20 Amis wide. Okay? The Arden took up 2.5 Amis. If you measured from one end of the Arden to the wall was 10, from the other end of the Arden to the wall was 10, the Arden took up 2.5, and the whole room was only 20. Which meant that 10 plus 10 plus 2.5 equaled 20. That's what the Gemara says, Mokim ha'Arden eino min amida. That the place of the Arden was measurement that didn't take up measurement.
It did have corners because it had to measure from the corner.
Yeah, yeah. It was exactly 2.5 Amis, okay? By the way, you have a picture in the Chumash here. It's not as good as these pictures. You have from the end, the arc was 2.5. From one end of the arc to the wall was 10. From the other side was 10. The arc took up 2.5 and it equaled 20. Which, by the way, is such a great miracle that it wasn't even counted in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos when it says the 10 miracles happened in the Beis HaMikdash, and these Nasa Lavisin Beis HaMikdash, It says it doesn't even count this tenth, this miracle that Makom Ha'aron Eino Min Amida. So the Mefarshim ask, why not? So simply the answer is that miracle nobody saw. Who went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim? The Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. All the other 10 miracles people saw. The only miracle that they didn't see was Makom Ha'aron Eino Min Amida, so therefore the Mishnah doesn't count it. In Chassidus it explains, why doesn't the Mishnah mention, count this miracle of Makom Ha'aron Eino Min Amida? The explanation is, this was a different caliber miracle completely. A different caliber miracle, I'll give you an example. Kriyas Yamsuf was a miracle. What was the miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf? Water normally flows. What happened by Kriyas Yamsuf? The water stood up as a wall. So what did Hashem do? Hashem basically changed the nature. What was the miracle? The miracle was, instead of water flowing, water stood up. So Hashem, so to speak, put a new nature into water. In other words, any natural thing is a miracle. Chassidus explains that Teva, nature, is a miracle. The fact that the sun comes up for 5,766 years, it never took a vacation, it never misfunctioned, there was never a change of batteries.
What did it?
No, they stopped it, but they made up. No. That, 1 minute. When Yaakov slept, the sun came out early, and because of that, it stayed later by Ginnan over there. Shemesh be giving daim. By Yeshua, I mean Shemesh be giving daim. It never misfunctioned unless Hashem made a miracle for whatever reason it is. But on its own, it kept going. So what does it mean? That's an unbelievable miracle. The truth is, if one day the sun would come up in the west and set in the east, the world would mshugah geworden. The world would go nuts. Or you take a seed in the ground, the seed rots in the ground, and that comes out a big tree. That's an unbelievable miracle. Or whoever was at the birth of a baby, it's an unbelievable miracle. So why don't people say it's a miracle? Why don't they say it's Yad Hashem? Because it happens so common, so often, as Chassidus uses the expression, a constant miracle is called nature. But nature itself is a miracle. It just constantly becomes a... So what did Hashem do by Kriyas Yamsuf? Hashem took the nature of water, which normally flows, and Hashem made it stand up like a wall. Here, it was an unbelievable miracle. It wasn't the pshat that Hashem took place and unplaced it. Here there was distinct measurements of place. It was 10 plus 10 plus 2.5. There was clearly place measurement. And in place, Hashem made it above place. In other words, He united place and above place simultaneously. Which is such a miracle because such a koyach, to use the Rashba's expression, was called nimna hanimnois, that Hashem is not even held back from what's held back. Hashem is not even held back from what's held back. Meaning, Hashem is not limited in place. He's not limited in above place. He's above both. And therefore, He could do both together. That's a much greater miracle than all the other miracles that happened in the Beis HaMikdash. So it says, this was a miracle of the Aron, that Hashem made with the Aron, because this is the ultimate revelation of godliness, is that He is in place and above place simultaneously.
But
it was in place too.
What does it matter? He's unlimited. So it's... What matter is that? I mean, I'm not arguing.
Let me ask you a Jewish question. Yeah. Is Hashem infinite?
That's limited.
Right. So He's not infinite.
Infinite and infinite.
Can't explain it.
You're getting there. You're getting there slowly. A few more years, you'll be a real... Hashem is not infinite. If somebody says Hashem is bli gvul, unlimited, infinite, there's two problems with that. Number one is you're limiting Him that He's infinite and not finite. That He's bli gvul and not gvul. Secondly, if Hashem is infinite, how in the world can He create finite? You can't create what you're not.
This world, but this world needs
because Hashem is above finite and infinite. Hashem is above miracle and nature. Hashem is above spiritual and physical. Therefore, he can make both, combine both, and do whatever he wants with both. Where did you see that in the Beis HaMikdash? The only miracle of that caliber was the Makom Ha'Aronenu Min Hamidbar. And that's why the Aron is mentioned. The first Aron symbolizes Torah. Aron was the place that God spoke, as we'll learn, Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu through the Kruvim of the Aron. All these things was because that was the greatest revelation of godliness in the world, was actually through the Aron. Through the Aron itself was the ultimate revelation of godliness in the world, more than anything else. It's similar, we mentioned this in the past, there's, you know, these weird philosophical questions. They ask two philosophical questions. Can God make another God? Or can God, which is even a weirder question, can God make a stone that he can't pick up? Now, what's the question? If you're saying he could, then you're saying he can't, because you're saying he's making a stone he can't pick up. Right? But if you say he can make such a thing, then yourself you can't say he... So it's like a catchy situation. It's a ridiculous question, by the way. Yeah, why is it ridiculous?
Because
I'll rephrase the question in simple English. I'm going to rephrase the question in simple English. Can you make a square circle?
Yes.
No, you can't.
Hashem can.
Hashem...
Rabbi Nachman asked this question.
The question is, the truth is, you can't make a square circle because such a thing can't be. It's a contradiction of terms. It's not my fault that I cannot make a square circle. One second.
Are you asking about this world? Or are you asking about
this world.
Instead of making it anywhere?
No, this world. This world. If I can't, I can make a square. I can make a circle. Right? So if I can't make a square circle, it's not that it's my fault that I can't make a square circle. A square circle can't be, because if it's a square, it's not a circle. A circle is not a square. You can't ask a question, can God create a God? Because a God, by definition, cannot be created. Anything which is created, by definition, is not God. It has to be mitziyus miatzmusi. It has to be a self-existent entity. If you're going to say, so it's not the pshat that God can't create a God. A created God can't be. It's not because Hashem can't do it. You can't make a square circle, because if it's square, it's not a circle. If it's a circle, it's not a square. So the question can't be. It's not the pshat that Hashem can't or can't. It's a ridiculous question to begin with, because it can't be. You can't have something Hashem can't do. So it's not the pshat that Hashem can't make a stone that he can't pick up. A stone that God can't pick up can't exist. It's a contradiction in terms. By the Aron, but the Aron though was a similar concept, that Hashem took the measurements of the Aron were 2.5, and the room was 20, and 10 plus 10, plus 2.5 equals 20. That was, so to speak, the farthest it can go of what we can handle. What we're able to handle is that now we can
understand.
What?
Because he made something space, not space. So of course he can make a square circle.
I'll tell you even a better question, better concept in Chassidus. It's all relevant here, but I'm not sidetracking that much, even though that's what we usually do for a living here. The whole concept, whoever learns Chassidus, and there is a concept called Tzimtzum. Tzimtzum.
Yeah.
Everybody knows Tzimtzum. People that are not even the Jewish know what Tzimtzum is. Tzimtzum, basically, the concept of Tzimtzum is in one-liner, and that it takes you about 500 years to figure it out, but the one-liner of Tzimtzum is, God is where he isn't. The concept of Tzimtzum means Hashem is where he isn't. And only Hashem could be where he isn't. It doesn't make sense. So, right, we can't understand Hashem.
There's some humans or the animals.
Huh?
There's some humans or the animals.
That's the normal. That's nature. There's not even a miracle. That's naturally.
There's some animals that owners think they're humans.
That's... You're getting better. Okay, so that's the concept of the Odin. Okay, in fact, they bring down the famous story over here with the Rabbi Loza. What? That supposedly. Okay. That's the whole thing, yeah.
Therefore, if Hashem is there, but he's not there, the holiness is there anyways.
Do you feel God?
Do I feel God? I don't know. I'm not at that level of sanctity. I can say I believe that there's a greater power. And it's.
Do you feel God?
Do I feel God where?
In your stomach. I mean, where?
Or physically. Spiritually or physically, I'm being honest.
Do you feel godliness?
Do I feel godliness right here?
In
wherever. Man, you're...
I'm being real. I'm not...
So if you're being real, tell me no.
You're telling me, do I feel godliness? I have no idea what that question means. I can say I believe in God.
Okay, I'm not going to get personal. Do you ever sin?
Sure.
Then you don't feel God.
Okay. Well, everybody sins.
Right, so they don't feel God. You're right. Whether it's temporary insanity... Permanent insanity. The Gemara says a person sins only nichnas bei ruach shtus. The bottom line of it is...
Yeah, God,
one second. Did God create a world? Bereshit bara lekim. Did God create a world?
Yes.
God created a world. Is God existing in the world?
Yes.
No. In human language, something that's not in the five chushim, in the five senses... It doesn't exist. In my world, if I don't see it, hear it, smell it, touch it, and
taste,
it doesn't exist. Correct? To give you a simple example, a person walks into an empty room. Mamish, nothing in the room. And they say there's nothing in the room. Okay, are they lying?
Yeah.
No, they're not.
Sure they are, because there's a room. What's a room?
I said, is there anything in the room?
This light.
Anything in the room?
This air.
Okay, so there's atoms and molecules and airwaves and, you know.
Oh, what do you mean? Okay, so.
Okay, but if a person says, according to Torah, if a person says, I'll give you an example. If a person says to a woman, Hareyat Mukadashisli, on the condition that there's nothing in the room. Is she Mukadeshes? Yeah, she becomes an Ashes Ish. I had a question, what do you mean there's nothing in the room? There's air, there's airwaves, there's TV with frequencies, the cell phone, there's zillions of waves in the air. But the person is not lying, and the condition is fulfilled, and she's married.
There's two witnesses.
Okay, he's got two witnesses. Then they're, but they're outside the room.
The room.
No, they're outside the room. They're outside looking in.
Okay,
no. Okay, so now the question, one second, why is that? Because in our realm, if I don't see it, taste it, smell it, whatever, it's not there. No. And that's a true concept. It's a Torah true concept. So now the question is, if a person doesn't feel Elokus, in his world, is God existing?
If a person doesn't feel
Elokus? Elokus, godliness. If a person doesn't feel Elokus, in his world, is it existing?
In his world? Okay, so no.
No. Is his world real or not real?
His world is real.
So does God exist or not?
In his world?
Yeah.
If he doesn't believe in it, if he doesn't see
but,
it.
But is God omnipresent? Is God all over the... Is there a place that God doesn't exist?
No.
So how could God not exist in his place?
For him, he doesn't see it.
But it's a true... But he exists.
Right.
So how can God... exist in a place where he doesn't feel God. That's exactly what I'm saying. God is where he isn't.
Right.
Meaning, in the world of Tzimtzum, God made the world in a way that you don't feel godliness.
Right.
That means in the realm of world where you don't feel godliness, he's not there. From your perspective. Like we learned, Chassidus in the morning, many times. Water in a red glass. What color does it look?
In a red glass, it's purple.
Depends which color water is. Water in a red glass looks red. And if I say the water is red, am I lying?
No.
No, because from my perspective, the water is red. Realistically, the water is colorless. Okay, but that doesn't mean that if I say the water is red, I'm lying. Hashem is all over the place, but like the great tzaddik once said, when they asked him, where is God? He said, wherever you let him in. That means, if you feel God, then he exists in your world. If you don't feel God, then in your world he doesn't exist. Now, God made a world where godliness should not be felt. And why did God make a world where godliness should not be felt? Because if we live in a world where godliness is felt, and we do mitzvahs, they're worthless. Because if you feel godliness, for sure you're going to want to do mitzvahs. What's the big deal? It's no accomplishment. What did Hashem do? He made a world that you don't feel godliness. Not only you don't feel godliness, we live in a world which is anti-godliness, in reality. And in that world, God said, that's why I want you to reveal me. So, Hashem exists all over. From Hashem's perspective, He is all over. Right? But God allows us to not feel godliness, and that's the concept of Tzimtzum, that God is where He isn't. We can't understand what it means, so don't even try to think. I'm only saying nice words. I don't know what I'm talking about either. What?
Well, when Abel and Cain knew that God existed, they still did
everything. No, at that time they didn't know. Okay. They didn't feel. Knowing is worthless. Feeling. When they came down into a body, they took on a human form and they were able to sin.
Yeah, but they knew God.
Not when they came down into the world. Not when they came down into the world. Once they came down into the world, they had the ability to sin. Not at the time they sinned.
Wait, what does it mean not at the time they sinned? In the forest, no, but in the house, yes? What is that, the time?
When a person davens, do they feel godliness?
Yes.
Does the same person sin 10 minutes later?
Yes.
So what's going on?
No, but I'm saying...
One minute, what... No, answer my question better. What's going on? He feels God, he doesn't feel God?
Well,
sometimes you feel, sometimes you don't feel. That's the story. Let's go by. We got off the track. Anyway...
You can feel God and sin? Because you're saying if we don't have the free choice, we won't do the mitzvah. Sometimes you know God is there and you do the averot and the mitzvah. It doesn't... People understand they sinned and they saw God and they sinned at the same time.
If you know...
Why are we talking about sinning?
If you know and you don't feel, you can sin. How many times do you know you're doing something, you're eating a food you shouldn't, or you're doing something you should do it anyway? The difference is because you don't feel it. If you felt it, you wouldn't do it. The whole concept of what the Pasuk says, Da es elekei avicha, v'avdeo b'lev evshalim. The Pasuk says, know God, das is feeling. It doesn't say, bina, Tavin alukus, tavin whatever. It says, da es elekei avicha. No means, das is feeling. It's not chochmen bina. Chochmen bina is understanding. Das is feeling. There's a famous story with the Maggid, with the Talmud of the Maggid, I mean. In the olden times, don't try it today, it doesn't work. In the olden times, they used to get married, and they used to leave home for a few years. Right after they got married, they went left home for a few years to learn, and then they came back. So, this guy was a chassid, a Talmud of the Mezitcha Maggid, and after he got married, he went to the Maggid for a few years. And the girl's father wasn't a believer in the Maggid, and he was upset and fuming that his son-in-law left his daughter. Okay? So finally he comes back, and the father-in-law was fuming at his son-in-law. He said, "Nu, tell me, what did you already learn in Mizritch by the Maggid? What did you learn already?" He said, "I learned that there's a God." So the guy fumed, he was started yelling and screaming. He says, "That's what you..." He called in the housekeeper in the kitchen, the Yiddish girl. He calls her and tells her, "Is there a God?" She says, "Yeah, sure." So he says, "You see, she knows there's a God. You have to leave your wife for 3 years to go to find out there's a God." So he said to him, a very deep answer, he said, "She says it, I know it."
Wow.
She says it. I mentioned many times, it's a true story, the rabbi told it to me himself. There was a very prominent rabbi, he used to be in the city. He had a grandson that went to one of the Chabad day camps. And he told me the story, his grandson came home the first day of camp, and the grandfather says to him, "No, what did you learn in camp? You know, what did you learn in camp today?" He said, "We want Mashiach now." Okay, typical, yeah? "We want Mashiach now." So the grandfather says to him, "But we all want Mashiach now, you know what I mean? Like, what's..." So he said to his grandfather, "You say it, but we mean it." this little 8-year-old kid. He said to his grandfather, "You say it, but we mean it." The grandfather himself, the rabbi told it to me.
The kids feel much more...
Okay, anyway.
Ask you a question.
What?
This time you said that Hashem is beyond infinity because that's the only way you could make finite. If you look at it, that's if you look at it qualitatively. But if you look at it quantitatively, so you could just say Hashem is infinite. And because it's infinite, finitude is included within him.
No, it's not. That's mathematically incorrect.
Quantitatively speaking,
No.
The world is so infinite.
You can never get to infinite by counting numbers. One of the mathematical proofs that the universe is not unlimited, because you can't reach unlimited with finite numbers. You can't count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 and reach infinite. Because if you take away 100 miles, is it smaller?
Any number you have, you can add 1 to it, you get a bigger number.
Right, or you take off 1, you get smaller. There cannot be realistic infinite amount of numbers. Theoretically, you can have infinite amount of numbers. But any number you add to it, take off from it, it's added early. If you take 100 miles off the universe, it's smaller. So it can't be infinite.
So the universe is not infinite, or it's...
It's finite.
It is finite?
Mathematically, it's finite.
What?
The universe is finite. Besides, in fact, Torah says...
No, if the Torah says that, I believe it.
No, but scientifically.
Mathematician.
Oh, really? Any mathematician will tell you. If from here to the sun is 93 million miles, right? And you take that away, is the universe smaller? Then it can't be infinite. How much is infinite minus 1?
But they said it's expanding forever, the
universe. It's expanding in a finite way. If it expands another million miles, it's still finite.
But I thought it's going forever.
No, it's not.
More than one universe.
Okay. Let's get back to the... What?
Why do we have to be so black and white about knowing?
Because Chassidim wear black hats and white shirts.
We go to the beach and we feel God. We go to a special occasion and dip. We feel, or Shabbat or whatever. We feel God at certain times. It's not like it's so black and white. We don't feel it.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, whatever. Then there's another issue the Mefarshim explain of why it says the Asu, that when it comes to Torah, no Jew has a right to tell another Jew, "You don't have a share in Torah. Only I do." Like, I have a bigger share in Torah. It's one of the reasons why they're half measurements also, that a person needs to realize that every Jew has an equal share in Torah. Okay, then he brings down over here the famous story in the Gemara. We mentioned the story in many times because it has other implications too. Rabbi Eliezer, the son of Rabbi Shimon Yochai, was going to a city to learn Torah. And along the way, he met a very ugly person. And Rabbi Eliezer says to him, "Kama mechur adam ze? Look how ugly you are." So the guy answered him, "Lech le'uman shazani. Go to the one that made me." I mean, what do you want from me? He says, "I'm ugly. Go to the one that made me." So Rabbi Eliezer realized he made a mistake, and he asked him mechila. He said, "Nope, I'm not forgiving you. No way I'm forgiving you." And they kept walking together, and they came to a city, and people heard Rabbi Eliezer, the son of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, is coming to town, and they all ran out to greet him, and they were giving him shalom aleichem. So this man, this ugly guy, says to the people, "Who are you greeting?" He says, "This great sage, Rabbi Eliezer." He said, "This guy, if he's... there shouldn't be too many people like him in the world. There shouldn't be more people like him." So he said to him, why? He said to him, you know what he told me? He said, look how ugly I am. Finally, the end of the story was, he finally begged him. He said, the people of the city said to him, listen, maybe he told you wrong, he wasn't nice what he told you, but go forgive him. So the Mefarshim explained, was Eliyahu HaNavi, this ugly person was Eliyahu HaNavi, and he got dressed up, and he made, why? Because he wanted Abel Yezer to have a little bit of humility in what he did. By the way, now that we mentioned the story, I have an obligation to explain the story from a Hasidic perspective, because otherwise the story doesn't make sense. First of all, Rabbi Eliezer ben Rabbi Shimon was the number two tzaddik in his generation. Okay, in the Gemara it says, Rabbi Shimon Yochai said to his son, if there's two tzaddikim in this generation, I mean, he said like this, if there's two tzaddikim in this generation, it's you and me. And if there's one, it's me. This is what Rabbi Shimon Yochai said to his son. So obviously Rabbi Eliezer was number two. Rabbi Eliezer, trust me, had nothing better to do than go around telling people how ugly they are. He didn't work in Atlantic City for Mr. America or Miss Universe or whatever it may be. And Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon, had other things to do besides going around and saying to a person, Kama Mechur Adam Zah, look how ugly you are. And first of all, what's the Gemara telling us the story? It's weird. It's weird that Rabbi Eliezer should tell this to the person. So the Rebbe explains the story in an unbelievable way. What happened over here was, there was a person that was extremely ugly in mitzvahs. And because he felt ugly in mitzvahs, he felt very inferior. That he is nothing. What did Rabbi Eliezer want him to realize? That he is the work of God. And if God made him, and he's a creation of God, there's no need to feel inferior. You are great because you are a creation that God made. Like it says in Kol Yisrael Yeshlam Chelek Leilam Abba, what we say before Pirkei Avos, Ba'amech Kulam Sadikim Leilam Yeshuas Neitze Matoi Ma'ase Yodai. Every Jew is the work of God's hand, Hashem says. There's part to be proud of. So the Rebbe explains like this. When Rabbi Eliezer looked at this guy, he saw a person that felt he had no milus, he had no unique, no greatnesses. Rabbi Eliezer wanted the person to realize that he has a unique greatness, that he's God's creation. What can you get better than that? How did Rabbi Eliezer get the person to realize that he's a creation of God? So Rabbi Eliezer said to him, look how ugly you are. What did he answer? Go to the one that made me. Meaning, go to God. God made me. What did Rabbi Eliezer bring out from the person? That the person realized he's a creation of God. And therefore, it's not, God forbid, a negative thing. Rabbi Eliezer, in order to bring out the ultimate greatness of the Jew, he had to knock it in a way that the person should bring out the greatness that he's a creation of God. There's a story with the Baal Shem Tov. People that didn't believe in him, needed a bracha for something, for children, whatever. And they were hesitant to go to the Baal Shem Tov, they didn't want to go. And people said, the guy's in the city, what are you afraid of? You have to lose already. Go to the Baal Shem Tov. So they come to the Baal Shem Tov, and the Baal Shem Tov listens to their request, they want a bracha for children. The Baal Shem Tov said to them, you put down 100 ruble on the table, I give you a bracha. If not, no deal. So the lady got angry. She didn't believe in the Baal Shem Tov to begin with. She got angry. She said, they never told me this, that I have to pay for your brachas. The Baal Shem Tov said, lady, take it or leave it. So the lady, so she had no choice. She started opening her wallet. She came up with 10 rubles, whatever it was. Finally, she said to the Baal Shem Tov, take it or leave it. Like, I have 10 rubles, take it or leave it. The Baal Shem Tov said, lady, leave it. I'm not 100 ruble. Or nothing. The lady got so angry at the Baal Shem Tov, she said to her husband, let's get out of here. I don't need this guy. We're going to daven straight to God. So the Baal Shem Tov said, lady, that's what I wanted to hear. Don't give me no money. Here's your bracha. And they had children. Sometimes you need to bring out within the person the realization that they have a certain greatness or a certain wealth that they have to be aware about. But here in the non-Hasidic world, they explained that what was the thing, what was the Baal Shem, what did the Rabbi Lazar ben Rabbi Shimon, the story was Eliyahu Navi came to make him have a little bit of bittul. To Rabbi Lazar, and that's what he did. Okay, let's start the next pasuk.
How does Chassidus reconcile with the fact that people were saying grass for Mechila?
Because in Gashmias, he still embarrassed them.
Not in front of anyone.
Good, between themselves. Okay, then it says, Vasisa pasuk yud gimel. Vasisa badei atzishitim, should make poles of wood. Vatzipisei simzov, you have to cover them with gold. Veveisa sabadim bataboyz, you have to put the poles into the rings. Altzalas arden, on the sides of the arden. Laseisa sardin bam, to carry the arden. Now, the din was, the arden, as we learned before, we read about it a few weeks ago. The arden had to be carried by the shoulders. You know, the people at the Kohenim, Bnei Kos, carried the arden. But the Torah says that you have to make it in such a way that the poles stay in, like we learned last week, they were thin in the middle and wide on the outside, that they actually never left the Yarden. Okay, so it says, "Betabes Yarden Yabadim Lo Yisurim Imenu." You're not allowed to take out the poles and the rings. "Minasata La Yarden," you have to put into the Yarden the edus that I gave you. Okay, this really we learned last time, except the additions that we did. Pasuk Yud Zayin. No, the Kohenim. Asisa kapedes zohav tohad. They had to make a cover for the arden. Now, if you can see this picture, the arden is not covered. The arden itself is not covered. So then they had to make the covering. This was the covering, by the way, with the kruvim on top. Now the covering, which was the gold covering, which was the exact measurements of the arden that it should fit on top of it and cover it, because the arden were boxes like this, okay, that were open on top. So they had to make a cover, and the keruvim, as the pasuk is going to say soon, there was one block of gold. Just like the menorah was made out of one block of gold, the cover and the keruvim, the pictures of the kids that we'll discuss soon, were made out of one piece of gold beaten out, not piecework. Just like the menorah wasn't made piecework, they took a blob of gold, a big one, and they banged it out until they came to the details of the menorah. The same thing was with the keruvim and the cover of the, it was one piece. It wasn't even soldered together, it was one piece made out of a block of gold that they beat it out until they made the keruvim and the cover of the arden. How big was the kapedus that covered the arden? It was amasai v'chetzi arka, 2.5 amas wide, long, ama v'chetzi rochba, 1.5 amas wide, because that was the measurement exactly of the arden.
How much did that weigh? It's solid gold.
It doesn't say here how much it weighed, but later on we'll learn about the menorah weight. It was a very heavy menorah.
So how big was it?
2.5, what, the cover, the
cover and the angels, how high, how big, what was that?
It was like a tefillin, wasn't it?
It doesn't say how high the kruvim were, but the kruvim basically were the size, the measurements, the arm was 2.5 by 1.5 by 1.5, amis. Okay, an amis between 1.5 and 2 feet. Well, officially it's from here to here, but every person has a different size. That's why you have long sleeves and short sleeves and different size sleeves. It's Adam Beinani. An Amma, according to the way we hold, is about 19 and a half inches. It's according to our opinions. Some people hold it's 2 feet. Some people hold it's 1.5 feet. But the Arden itself was Amasai v'chetzi Arkid, 2.5 amas long, 1.5 amas wide. So the Kruvim, the covering, was 2.5 by 1.5 amas, because they had to cover the arden. Now the Mefarshim explained, Bechlau, the arden weighed a ton. Not literally a ton. It was very heavy. It was almost impossible for 4 people to carry it. It weighed a ton.
They carried them.
Oh, so it says the arden carried the people. The Aron carried the people. It was a miracle. When they carried the Aron, it was taka a miracle.
Where is it now?
The Aron was missing in the second Beis HaMikdash. This is the finished product of the Aron. The Aron was missing in the second Beis HaMikdash. According to the Rambam, Yeshio HaMelech, when Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash, he knew that the Beis HaMikdash was going to be destroyed. So he made underground tunnels in such a maze that nobody would ever be able to find it. And Yeshio HaMelech, when they're going out into Golos after the first Beis HaMikdash, buried the Aron with other materials in the underneath the Beis HaMikdash, and nobody could find it. And therefore, in the second Beis HaMikdash, they didn't have an Aron. There was no Luchis, there was no Aron in the second Beis HaMikdash. It was missing. One of the five things missing in the second Beis HaMikdash.
They still had the same miracles?
Same miracles. But not Makom HaAron Einam Min Amida. By the way, some of Farshim answered the question, why doesn't the Mishnah Pirkei Avos say that doesn't mention the miracle about the Aron? Because the Mishnah is talking about the second Beis HaMikdash. The second Beis HaMikdash was no Aron, so you can't say a miracle that didn't happen. That's another answer. I mean, but the various different answers, like we said.
Was the Aron ever opened?
No. In fact, we're going to learn when we get there, when they put the Luchis in the Aron, the din was nobody was allowed to see it but Moshe Rabbeinu. In other words, it says in the Medrash that when Moshe Rabbeinu put the Luchis, nobody was allowed to see the way he put the Luchis into the Aron. Now it says, what did they do is, when they wanted to put, the guys had to cover, put the Kaperis on the Aron, right? So what they did was, they picked it up in a way that they couldn't see what was going underneath it. In other words, the four people picked it up, that it blocked their view of the underneath, what was going on in the Aron. Moshe Rabbeinu put the Luchas into the Aron, they closed it up without seeing it.
The dimensions of the Luchas were the same as the dimensions of the Aron?
No, because you had the Luchas. See, the question is, it's a big machlekes in the Gemara. What was in the Aron? According to certain opinions, there was a board protruding outside the Aron that they put something in, like the Sefer Torah. But the Luchis, as we mentioned last week, were 6 Tvachim by 6 Tvachim by 3 Tvachim deep. In other words, the Luchis were square, but not cubic, not cubed, because it was only 3 Tvachim deep. But like we mentioned last week, therefore, the Luchas were not rounded on top, like you see all the pictures of the tablets. That's mamish against the Gemara. The Gemara says the Luchas were square, 6 Tvachim by 6 Tvachim. Now, if the 6 Tvachim is 1 Amma,
it's much smaller, 18 inch.
The Aron was 2.5. Okay? Not much smaller. You had 2 Luchas to put in.
Oh, the Shvarim and the
Holmans. Right. Both they brought the Shvarim and Shivri Luchas, who are also there.
Same volume.
In fact, we mentioned last week, the word Elul, Aleph Lamed Vav Lamed, stands for Aron Luchas v'Shivri Luchas. The Aron with the Luchas and the broken Luchas. Plus, according to another opinion, the Sefer Torah is also in there. Then you figure out how everything fit.
And the man was outside
of
there.
That was outside in the Kedesh HaKadoshim.
So the only person who ever saw this was...
Yeah.